Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. We have completed 2 full hours on the subject of the crisis at Pacifica and its 5 individual stations around the United States. A venerated institution for many decades, more than 60 years of age now, representing WBAI in New York, 50,000 clear channel signal, KPFK in Los Angeles that has one of the most powerful signals in the entire western part of the United States, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFT in Houston, Texas, and WPFW in Washington, D.C. The problem is, for at least 15 years, there has been infighting and malfeasance on the part of individuals or people who think that they have a knowledge of how to run a radio station or a nonprofit foundation. Unfortunately, the outcome, irrespective of their motivation, has been a substantial decline in audience participation, in revenues, and in overall memberships. It's not just about the economy. That was the excuse we heard time and again, because in the very same markets, you have non-commercial stations with even smaller signals and a shorter lifespan in that market, but are booming. Their numbers are substantial. In Los Angeles, for example, a nonprofit radio station out there that is non-commercial has more than 100,000 paying members. When you look at KPFK, you're down to under 10,000. So what happened? We've been hearing from people, from members of the national board, including former national executive director, such as Summer Reese, members of the national board, such as Steve Brown and Janet Coleman, and also people who have been involved in local stations advisory boards. All we know at this moment is that the stations collectively have licenses, but 2 commercial and 3 non-commercial, that are available in the marketplace at a price that would range anywhere from about $125 to $200 million. That's a lot of value. And yet, all of the stations are in deep financial crisis. They cannot pay their bills. In the case of WBAI, as of this morning, it cannot pay the last payroll. It cannot pay the rent. It cannot pay the utilities. It cannot pay the phone bill. It cannot pay the health insurance, and it cannot pay for the signal at the Empire State Building, our transmitter. It owes about $800,000. So how do you get out of that hole? Well, first you better understand, how did you get in that mess? What happened over a long period of time to erode such a listener base? Today, our first panelist is a person who has been in management twice at WBAI in New York as an assistant station manager and also assistant program director, plus an on-air celebrity. He is well-known. He is highly respected. His name is Mike Fader. He was on Sirius Radio for a long time and now has a program every week, a very popular program on the Progressive Radio Network. Nice to have you with us today, Mike.
Thanks for inviting me, Gary.
Quarter century on any radio station allows you to have the perspective of insight. I'm going to ask you, from your individual experience and your perception, what happened at Pacifica and WBAI that allowed it to be where it is today, virtually insolvent? And take us through this journey.
Well, 2 qualifications before I make any comments. One is that I haven't really followed what's happening on the national level. So, you know, that's something I can't really speak to too well. And as for BAI, I have not been on the air there for 10 years, although I have many friends who are still on the air, and I have friends who are on various local boards and national boards. So I keep up with it that way. It's not a simple answer. I mean, it's complex, but BAI had a certain responsibility always to represent the downtrodden, the oppressed, and that's something it always did. And I was a listener to the station and a subscriber since 1966, and got involved with the station in management in April of 1978 as assistant program director. That was kind of a clerk's job, an assistant's job to the program director. But I sat in on every program council meeting, which was once a week at least, and then later on became the assistant manager. And when I was the assistant manager, which was in the late 70s, it was almost more of a management job. I was almost more of a manager because the manager at the time was often had some health problems and was often unable to manage the place. So I kind of ran the place and I got to know it. And I stayed close to many people in management and in programming and got to know the program directors over the years. It's hard to know where to begin, but there was always one thing was, I don't want my remarks to reflect poorly on any one particular person, because I don't feel like singling people out for various reasons. Though sometimes a powerful personality can influence an entire station's programming and their management, which you understand and I understand. But there was always a very large listener base in New York City of, and this is from, you know, from my perspective, always just my opinion, but there was always a large listener base in New York City of extremely liberal, I don't know what you'd say, it's impossible to do this without talking about race. Is that okay then?
As long as you're not mentioning names, yes.
No, I'm not mentioning names. Yeah. But the station had a huge listener base of leftists and liberals. A lot of these people were middle class, and sometimes, I shouldn't say a lot, but a significant number of people were middle class, upper middle class, and a lot of them were Jews, which is typical in the history of this country that Jews were leftists and liberals in many cases, in most cases, actually, for all the obvious reasons. And they loved BAI. They supported BAI. And so the listener base there was, I'd say sometimes, I'd have to guess, but I'd be estimating somewhere between 30 and 50%, maybe that's conservative, of liberal Jews who, whatever they could afford, and sometimes some of them could afford a bit more than other people, contribute to the station. And it was, I think, a subscribership, you'd know better than I, that was up somewhere in the early or mid 20,000, something like 25,000 once upon a time.
Yes, that's correct.
And that at its height. And that was in the 60s and perhaps in the early to mid 70s. After that, it started to go down a bit. And part of that has to do with history, because after the Vietnam War and after a lot of turbulence in the 60s and 70s, there was a kind of falling off of activity everywhere. But still, the station was backed by people. And even when, and this is part of BAI, even when people did not disagree, BAI, I always thought it was free speech radio, I knew many people, including myself, who disagreed even violently with some of the programming on there or some of the opinions expressed. But still, whenever they asked for money, we gave them money. I was a subscriber for 20 years, even overlapping when I was on the air. And slowly but surely, to the point where it got to be overwhelming, the station's programming changed. And it's probably difficult to pinpoint a time, but starting around, I'd say, the late 70s and early 80s, and some of this has to do with certain personalities, but some of it has to do with just sort of a sea change that was, you know, happening there. The programming changed, and it changed in two major ways. One is that everybody that I observed, that I always listened to on the air, and who I saw in the programming meetings, and who were hired, and who had been there for many years on the air, there were standards. There were certain minimum standards of being able to speak articulately on the radio, being able to, you were trained sometimes, you were told how to speak, and if you didn't know how to, people would take you aside and give you tips. People were very, very professional back in those days, and you can see that just in one way, is that a lot of people who originally started at BAI and other places in Pacifica went on to have pretty prominent careers in on other television and radio stations on a national level. And part of it was professionalism. It was a kind of dedication to the truth and intellectual ability, and also the ability to speak well on the radio. Not to use capitalist terms, but what comes over the air at BAI, BAI's product is what people hear. You know, when people say something on BAI, when the shows are broadcast, that's the product that BAI is selling. And if people cannot speak well, if they are not intellectually up to the job, and this is let alone if they are actually not interested in the truth, people at BAI were always, no matter what their point of view, generally intelligent and articulate. And somehow that standard started to disappear, I'd say somewhere in the 80s, and got worse and worse and worse. And then the people behind the scenes were also extremely talented people, many of whom have gone on to found very large businesses based on their technical knowledge, or have become engineers, crack engineers, at various other significant radio and television stations. So that also went down, and there was a certain cronyism. And what happened was, the bottom line, and this is just one aspect of it, but a major aspect, the professionalism and the talent and the ability and the dedication to doing good work on the air and technically off the air started to erode, and finally got to the point where it was almost non-existent. It was just purely hit or miss. Many of the programs were, you couldn't listen to them. They were not broadcast correctly. I was there during a time when somebody was engineering the news, and this is part of the cronyism that was involved. He was hired to engineer the news. He shouldn't have been an engineer in a toy radio station in his house, let alone on BAI. I was on right after the news, so I got there early. The news, he put it on backwards. It was taped. He put it on backwards. And there were people who were supposed to be, there was one time somebody was supposed to be, and this is part of the cronyism, covering the Labor Day parade out in the West Indian Day parade, rather, out in Brooklyn, a massive event from which the station used to raise, Amy Goodman used to anchor this, and then other people did later. Station raised hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes on that day and afterwards, and certainly tens of thousands of dollars during each hour based on this. It's a major fundraising event. There was one time when one of the people who was supremely inefficient and untalented, but hired because of his relationship to somebody who was running the station at the time, phoned in, and I was actually in a position, since I was on that day early in the morning, to start off actually receiving the transmission live over the air of the parade events. He phoned in a couple of minutes beforehand and told me that he had forgotten to bring some equipment, so we'd probably have to skip the broadcast that day. This kind of, one time I came in to do some work in my office when I was the assistant manager, and somebody else who had been hired, sort of as a crony, was supposed to do a six-hour special on jazz, modern jazz. He came in and dumped about 2 feet of records, you know, back in the days when antediluvian times when we used actual records. Just dumped the records, and he said he had something else to do that day, and I'd have to take over. Bottom line, in the 80s and the 90s, the efficiency, the intelligence, the ability to broadcast, the ability to be a decent engineer started to disappear. That's one thing. Second thing is there was something that I had seen just hit or miss once every, you know, several months when I was the assistant manager, that sometimes equipment, this is a station, you know, that was poverty-stricken all the time, even in those days, even though we had a lot of listeners. We had always trouble paying, and some subscribers too, but we had trouble paying the bills. And sometimes there were people there who would, this is again back in the day of turntables, who would steal needles that were playing, you know, for records. They would steal a microphone here and there. And to me, though I'm not that religious, it was like stealing from a poor parish church. I mean, here's a place dedicated to helping everybody who needed help in the world. and people were stealing from it. Not that much. But later on, it became almost institutionalized. People would contribute premiums, and I think maybe you had some experience with this yourself, books or tapes or DVDs or other items. People would contribute these things to the station to try to help, you know, a very worthy cause. And these things were never mailed out. That's inefficiency. And people complained, and a lot of people withdrew their support for the station because they got angry, because they had pledged for a certain premium, which they never got. And the other thing was that a lot of these premiums were walking out the door and being sold in other parts of the city by people who were in positions of power. It was pure theft. And part of that was there was also often major fundraising events for the station. For instance, we had a boat ride, you know, up the Hudson. One time I was responsible for collecting the cash for that, which I did, and then I deposited in a night deposit box at our local bank. But over the years, with certain people who were running these things and using BAI to promote them all the time, some of this cash went missing. And as far as I'm concerned, it was probably tens of thousands of dollars over the years. Could have been more. And then people just started using the place for the piggy bank. There was somebody who was holding down a couple of jobs and getting paid a lot of money during a time when the station was not taking any money in. Okay, that's the one side of it. That's, you know, the kind of inefficiency. And then a lot of money was just siphoned off, and nobody ever knows where it went. And the other part was, how to put this, I'm no fan of the behavior of the Israelis towards the Palestinians. That's putting it mildly. Sometimes I've gotten outraged at the way the Israelis have treated the Palestinians. But there got to be a certain point, again, this started in the late 70s or early 80s, by my estimation, when people there connected to various departments focused almost exclusively on Israel. And it got to the point where you'd have to figure out, if you listened to BAI at a certain point in the late 70s and the 80s and then in the 90s, you would have to think that Israel was the worst country that ever lived. It was worse than Nazi Germany. It was worse than Soviet Russia. It was worse than Communist China. It was worse than any country there was. There was no country worse than Israel. There was one point where on the news, the lead story was inevitably something awful that Israel did, and then everything else in the world. This isn't a planet that was filled with dictators and mass murders and who knows what. And again, I want to say that, you know, as far as the Palestinians, Israel, I think, has a lot to answer for with the Palestinians, and this goes all the way back and up to including the present time. That's, you know, that's something I feel very strongly about. Then it crosses over into a certain line where it wasn't always just Israel. It got to be the Jews. And when I say that the BAI had a lot of liberal supporters, many of them and typically were Jewish, as I mentioned. And they got to be, after a while, you know, middle class, or and they got to be, you know, they got older. Some of them became upper middle class, but they always, and some of them just stayed the way they were, but they always were loyal to BAI. But after a while, you get a sense when it's not, when Israel is being used as a code word for Jew. And then after a while, they just dispensed with the Israel part and just went straight into talking about Jews. There were many broadcasters on the air, and there were people who were involved in setting up programming who just removed programs that were hosted by Jews. They made it very clear that they could live without them, that there wasn't Jewish programming. And I got very involved in this and mentioned it on the air, and got into a big fight with the then program director on the air about this. And I felt that it had gone too far, and I thought I was being objective. You know, I had my attitudes about Israel. I was realistic about it. But straight-out remarks about Jews, if somebody Jewish would call up at certain shows, they would be hung up on or insulted. And then some people who had fairly significant listenerships just took the opportunity to insult Jews one way or another. Inevitably, now a lot of Jews are stuck on Israel positively, and Israel can do no wrong. So I can't say, you know, they got sick of BAI because they didn't want to hear Israel denounced in any way, and they just took off. They wouldn't have anything to do with it. I don't think they were being objective. They weren't giving a fair shake to the Palestinians in the way they were being treated. But yet other people understood that this constant bashing of Israel to the exclusion almost sometimes of every other country in the world, which was in some ways much worse than Israel, the dictatorships, and as I say, people who were murdering their own citizens en masse, and then the sheer anti-Semitism of the station drove away thousands and thousands and thousands of subscribers. The list went down to, it was, I don't know what it is now, is it below 10,000?
Yes.
And the money just wasn't there anymore. They took their money away after agonizing. I'd run into people on the street, or people would write me letters and say, you know, I hate to do this. BAI is such an important radio station. It means everything to me. I grew up on it. I've always stuck by it, but I can't take this anymore. I don't need to hear anti-Semitism day in and day out on a station that I listen to for entertainment and news. So I guess just to sum up, there was inefficiency. There was a tremendous plunge in professionalism on the air and off the air. There was cronyism. A lot of equipment and premiums and money went missing. And there was this tremendous anti-Semitism, and I should say, although it sounds bizarre, and I was once told that this is impossible, I would call it black racism against whites. And people got tired of that, too. So over the last 10 or 20 years, I've run into dozens and dozens of people everywhere, post office, on the street, other places where people recognize my voice, and they'd say, oh, you're still on BAI? I haven't listened for, and then fill in the blank, X number of years. And I'd say, why? But after a while, I didn't have to ask. And they would tell me what I just told you. You know, what they heard was bad programming by bad programmers and bad producers. And they heard anti-Semitism, and a lot of people heard just racism. And as far as I know, it has never really slowed down or stopped. And that's basically my answer to that, although I know I've made some generalizations.
I'll add one little comment of my own. I had a meeting with a group of rabbis who were supporters of the station and listened to my program. Some of these were Orthodox, even ultra-Orthodox, and because they were very much into health. And all they ask is, would they be able to send a representative over to debate and present a different point of view, one of the programs on BAI that was, they felt, vehemently anti-Semitic and lacked any sense of objectivity. So I spoke with the program director, and he said, I cannot interfere. I agree with you that that program is all one-sided, but it's the programmer's choice. So I asked the programmer, and he refused, out and out refused to debate. I said, well, if you feel that strongly about the conviction that you're right, why not invite these people on and show them your rightness? Why not give them a voice? He refused to. So that was my own personal experience. And as a result, the rabbi said then they were sorry, but they would have to stop listening to me and the station and supporting it. And I remember I kept very careful track of all the Arbitron ratings every single period. No one else did. And you could just see this huge drop-off at the station after they withdrew their listenership. And I don't believe people ever realized how many observant or Orthodox Jews supported the station at one time in its history. And I'd brought a lot of them over from WMCA radio, and where I had a huge audience, and even bring him over from ABC, where I was for many, many years.
Were you on EVD, too?
I was on EVD. I was on WEVD for 14 years.
Hmm.
So I brought them over, and EVD is the Jewish station. So I would promote BAI every single Sunday evening for 3 hours on EVD. So that's
well,
why
it was until they sold it to ESPN, but you know, yes. Nevertheless, it was a Jewish forwards radio station.
That is correct. You're listening right now to a special edition of the Progressive Commentary Hour. So, Mike, let me try to summarize what you've said up to this point and see if it's accurate or not.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that there were several reasons that you believe that BAI has lost its audience and its relevance because it was once supported by a diverse group of individuals, but a lot of those individuals were educated, liberal, socially progressive Jews, and that once there was programming on the air that was against Israel, even though you were completely appalled by what you saw as the relationships between the Israeli government in power and the different Palestinian situation, including in Gaza and the West Bank, you could certainly understand the plight of the Palestinians, and you had many arguments on this. You saw the energy and the decorum of dialogue being extremely anti-Israeli, then anti-Jewish, without using the Israeli moniker any longer, and then in some cases becoming anti-Semitic. And because you were involved with both management and programming in different phases, plus you were on air there for a long time, quarter century of being there, you saw that there was almost a subtle shift. It wasn't Teutonic because you still had good programmers. You still had people good in management.
Oh, yeah.
But you also saw that many times the most professional people would come and do their shows, like Eileen Sizis, Liss, and Lex Hickson and others,
mm-hmm.
and then go home. But the people who were there more often than not, and people who were the activists and agitators a lot, they didn't believe that there should be two voices. There was one voice. And if you were against, if you were at the opposite end of them, you were given no patience, no understanding, and frequently verbally attacked. Also at the same time, you saw that instead of having the type of management that you believe should have been in place, highly professional management, at different times, there were people in positions of authority who allowed people, or at least were not assertive and professional in where's the money. You did a fundraising event, where's all the receipts?
Mm-hmm.
Or why is this microphone missing? Who's stealing from this place? And I remember, and I'll add my own particular perspective in, I remember for a period of time when drugs were being sold out of BAI. In fact, I was one of the people who went there on a Sunday with a friend of mine who was in law enforcement, saw this and raised hell with a person who was behind it. And the next day, in fact, the person in police enforcement said, if this ever happens again, you will be closed down. And I went to management the next day, and I spoke with the management, and it's as if they knew it. They knew what was going on, but they didn't want to hear it. I'm not here on the weekends, and I didn't know this. You know, I had heard about it. I said, why didn't you investigate? Because already there was this polarization, this balkanization of BAI, depending upon who had which group, and none of these people were popular on the air, but they were there. I remember bringing Linus Pauling in one day, and he had to step over people sleeping, including a guy who was out on drugs, dog that had defecated up and down the hallway, and I'm apologizing to Linus Pauling as we went down the studios, and he said, You could use a cleaning service. And I said, yeah, we could clean out some of the people here. That would be good, too. I also remember finding, as I'm going up one day, a $1,000 micro-portable recording outfit that I'd given the station because it didn't have one, and a guy's walking out with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, that's my name on there. I'd given it. He's, well, I just bought it for $100. I said, I'll give you $125. So I bought back my own thing, and then I didn't give it back to the station because as I was giving them stuff, going in the front door, there were people there selling it going out the back, and I'm thinking, how could this be possible? But I was told, keep my nose out of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and including the fact that in all the years at BAI, 39 years, I was never given an office. I was never given a desk. My producers were harassed, verbally harassed, and they didn't want to go to the station. They didn't want me on the station. They said, look, you're on ABC. You don't need to be on BI. I said, but I want to help. And so I also saw this intemperance towards anything professional. But there were professional people in management and on the air and donors. But in time, after I met with the rabbis and they pulled away, they said, we cannot support this. I saw a precipitous decline in the Arbitron ratings. I mean, substantial decline.
Well, you know...
Is that a fairly accurate statement summarizing
I think you summarize what I said pretty well. I mean, then, of course, you were talking about some of your own experiences,
yes,
which I'm not familiar with. But and also some of this, all of this kind of stuff overlaps until a certain point. And I don't know, what you'd call a tipping point, somewhere in the 80s, mid to late 80s somewhere. And after that, I think it just sort of all fell off a cliff. But until then, you had an overlap. Of course, there are still terrific broadcasters on the air, BAI. There always have been, and there still are. I think there are fewer and fewer, but there's still some stalwarts there who have solid audiences, and they're terrific broadcasters. And so things overlap, and there was some management. I have to say one thing, though. As far as the drug culture at BAI, the drug culture, I don't know what your experience was exactly, but my experience was when I went down there, and I was always very puritanical and rigid about drugs. I had been a probation officer, and I just personally, I never really, got involved in drugs for all sorts of reasons. But that's something that was always at BAI. I have to say, just to set up the context, it was always part of the 60s experience, especially at BAI. And though when I was there, nobody was ever, I don't know what kind of drugs you're talking about, but nobody's ever selling hard drugs.
These were hard drugs. And I had heard about it from someone who said that if the police ever raided the place, they could close down the station, it could lose its license. That's where I went. I've never done a drug, but I don't condemn anyone who does. That's their business. But I didn't want to see the station lose its license over something. And it was on the weekends when this was occurring, when, the place would be fairly empty. But
right.
Be that as it may, let's go forward.
Yeah.
All right? What do you see as the turning point, if there was a turning point, where BAI, as you said, fell off a cliff, the tipping point?
Well, first of all, it's difficult, again, to talk about this without talking about certain charismatic personalities that took hold of the station, and whoever they may have been at a certain point, they didn't have the, I don't know what the word would be, tolerance, or they didn't have the interest in having opposing voices on the air, or, expanding the place to the point where it included every kind of voice. They just were more interested in making it more exclusive and concentrating the voice in one particular way. And when those people were in power, and there was numerous people over a period of, I suppose, several years, somewhere again in the 80s and then the early 90s, just kept reducing the quality and the competence of the station. And I have no way of proving any kind of crimes, and I'm not alleging any kind of crimes, but it was obvious that if you were their friend, when I was there, people didn't come down there because they were a friend of somebody else's. They came down there drawn by similar intellectual and cultural feelings and needs and the mission of BAI. And, their competence was checked out. And if they were truly competent and professional, it didn't sometimes even matter what their voice was. It could be a different voice. It could be a different sexuality, a different color. It didn't make any difference. But afterwards, all of that sort of went out the window. And what BAI had stood for, what BAI was famous for, which was promoting actually sort of social, cultural, and political revolution, just changed into a kind of small country that was managed by people who appointed their own, you know, relatives or friends, and it didn't make any difference after a while, hardly any difference at all, whether somebody was competent or not. And then all of a sudden, money became very important to people at the station. The people who were there when I first started, when I first got involved with the station, none of them were rich. None of them had any extra money. None of them, they all had to work hard, and they weren't bringing home any money, I know, because I got paid so little as an assistant manager. But we weren't necessarily doing it for the money. In fact, most of us couldn't be doing it for the money. There wasn't hardly any money to be paid to people. But later on, it sort of became like a cow that people milked, you know, for their own benefit. And it just became cronyism and money and the mission, it seemed to me, was lost. The competence was lost. The professionalism was lost. And it was almost like a suicidal attitude about the listenership. They just kept alienating what I would consider to be like three-quarters to four-fifths of the listeners and the contributors. And I don't know what the point of that was except extreme narrow-mindedness and bigotry. So I couldn't tell you exactly the years that it happened, but I would say... Okay.
Do you believe that there should be an investigation in over the years of the privatization of the important assets of Pacifica?
Well, like I said before, I don't really follow what goes on at Pacifica,
okay.
But there's always, since the licenses, as you mentioned earlier, are so valuable, I don't think they're anywhere as valuable as they used to be, but they're still valuable if you put them all together. I think, yes, I mean, if what I'm hearing is true, but I can't speak to that. I don't know what's been going on.
Let me ask you one final question that you can speak to. I have continued to support Pacifica and the sister station WBAI for 39 years I've been on the air, and years before that I listened. And I keep a very optimistic attitude that, okay, we're in a crisis right now, but if we get the audience to support the station, if we do our best on the air, then maybe we'll start to get new listeners in. No matter what I've done or suggested, or other people who are very professional in their field, people on the local station board, people at different times in management, people who are volunteers, there's been a plethora of positive input to the station and the foundation. Because remember, I was on KPFK for in Los Angeles for 31 years. I just quit 2 years ago because I got sick and tired of raising hundreds of thousands of dollars every marathon to pay the salaries of people who were unprofessional, who were just filled with anger and spewing this anger over the air, which is bad radio, as you know.
Oh, well, yeah.
And also on PFW in Washington, D.C. I quit there after they told me that, you might find this interesting. I will not mention names, but it's a matter of record, where I was talking with the person about what premiums don't want to offer, and I was telling about some books and documentaries, and everybody, this person said, great. And then when the week came for me to pitch, I called and they said, well, the fundraiser's over. I said, how's this over? I was told I'm going to pitch the next 3 weeks. No, we finished last week. You finished last week? So I was sent over to a person that I communicate with there and said, what happened? The person didn't say anything, and there was just silence. One of those silences where you know there's something on the other end of the silence.
Right.
And so I said, well, just tell me the truth. That's all I'm asking. Well, we know your policy of honoring the audience, not wanting to pitch for new premiums if they haven't sent out the old premiums, and we haven't sent out the old premiums. So the idea was that we would not send out the old premiums. We would just do new pitch, but put you on tape using your last marathon and the one before for this one. I said, but that, first of all, that runs up against the FTC ruling. You can't do that. You're in violation of the 30-day rule. Secondly, it's very dishonorable because you're dishonoring the audience. You have no intention of giving their premiums, and it means you spent the money on something else.
Mm-hmm.
Did you intend to put a separate account together where the money comes in, it goes into a premium account, and you pay the vendors to get those premiums out? No. Well, then that's deceit. So I said, I can't be a part of the station. I quit. After 31 years. Mind you, I had the largest audience on both KPFK and PFW I left them both almost same time, same reasons. Now, I'm almost to where I'm going. So at this time, when I look at all the great ideas they've had and none used, all the people who've contributed time and energy and they've been dismissed, when I look at the people who believe that we can have another day at BAI and Pacifica, and yet the people in power are not going to allow that. So it's not what you want to do. It's what the people who have radio shows are not going to give them up. People in positions of management are not going to give them up. People at the national board are not going to give them up. The local stations, which are worthless and all fighting, and the national board fighting, power groups that don't want to change. And those who do want something want the licenses, and they're trying to change BAI to make it completely insolvent. So at this moment, all I see is in every market, the lowest possible listenership of any radio station. If there's 100 stations in the market, we're 101. Their community stations have larger audiences, and yet we've been here the longest. So here's the excuse. Well, we need more money to promote all the great programming we're doing, and I say, hold on a second. You're like the person that smokes 7 packs of cigarettes a day, then is shocked when you get lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that for 50 years, there has been an ebb and flow of expanding and contracting your audience. But for the last 20 years, you've been contracting that audience. In part, you have put people in position of power to alienate people, as if part of what they pride themselves in is showing other people they're not good enough ideologically to listen to our programs on this station. Well, you've succeeded. If you think older people in the greater New York area have never heard of BAI or didn't want to support it, then you're in denial of history. They've heard of BAI. Now, young people, older people have. They just don't want to hear it anymore because they've been alienated. And when you've alienated millions of people cumulatively over the years, they're not coming back. So that leads me then, what is possible? Here's what I'm thinking. You realize that the days of the land-based terrestrial stations are over. They are over. All of them are over. Even some of the big syndicates are hundreds of millions of dollars in debt. Some are billions of dollars in debt. Some of the big ones. And the listenership on radio, the viewership on television, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, all down. Mm-hmm. Radio and magazines, down. But what's rising is the Internet. So you take the best of your community broadcasting. You expand that tremendously to get other good community broadcasters in, talking about the issues in a community, its problems and solutions. You put it on the Internet. You take the best of your international programming, the programming that addresses social and personal and political and health and environmental and economic issues at the larger macro level, and you put them on. You have two channels, both Internet. You eliminate all the other stations, the station boards, the management. You have one program director, and you broadcast out of one operation, because 99% of it can now be done by telephone, and you have people listen by telephone, which is booming and is the future. I've had 19 million minutes of people listening recently just to my show at noon, plus the Internet. For those who aren't savvy enough to use the Internet, you've got two means. That way you have a future for Pacifica, its stage, its programs, but you don't have the politics, all the fundraising needs. So that's how I see a realistic future going forward. I do not see any other way to save any single station or the foundation. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I mean, that is obviously the way of things. I mean, publishing in general, newspapers. Look, newspapers are disappearing, by the bunch every month or so. People being laid off. I mean, it's happening all the time. It is really, everything is the Internet, and it's smartphones, and it's telephones, and it's podcasts, and BAI has to try to, and Pacifica, I guess, has to try to keep up with that. Centralization has always been a problem for Pacifica, and I always thought that it was good to have separate entities, almost like what you call it, states' rights, without the usual shadow that goes over that phrase. But centralization is something that I think that always bothered people at various Pacifica stations. They were happy about being in their own communities, and they didn't like too much centralization. So what you're suggesting is a kind of centralizing of everything, I guess, to save money and to make things more efficient. But I think you'd probably find that the kind of people who do community broadcasting would always push back a little bit about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
but it may be the way of things. I don't know.
Well, look, you and I both know that the Internet is the future.
That's obvious.
I mean, and by being able to take voices out over the Internet without going through this torturous process of having people on the air holding the microphones that long ago should have given them up, don't have an audience, you can then connect with people all over the world, not just those within a certain range of your listening signal.
But BAI is, they do broadcast their shows on the net, don't they?
Yes, they do, as do each of the five stations. But
right.
Again, you do that by hiring the best people to come in who know what they're doing, and that you do it right. They have on an, I'll just give you the figures, because I get them every single day. The average program, prior to mine, will get anywhere from dozens to a few hundred. That's it.
It's sad. Very sad.
Hundreds. Now, on KPFK, we got the ratings on this, and I still have them. In fact, I published the ratings. At 3 o'clock in the morning, that's 3 a.m. in Los Angeles, was the highest amount of people listening over the Internet on KPFK. We would have about 3,000, 2 to 3,000. We were number one on the whole station. And they have people on there who may have, you know, created a good reputation for themselves and have a good name. They don't have any audiences. And that's the amazing thing. When you look at all the different indices that determine an audience, you look at everything and you say, what kind of audience this person has? They're well known. Yeah, but then I look at the Arbitrons, and they've got 1,000 listeners. I look at morning shows that have got 300 listeners. I look at Prime Drive in the evening that have 500 listeners instead of 500,000 or even 50,000. And you think, how in the world can the management, the programming, the national board, how can people not look at these numbers and say, we've got to change this? And yet there is a reluctance to change, because at the end of the day, a part of the human experience is people don't want to give up what they've gained.
It's true. People are reluctant to change. I understand that. But you don't change, you die. That's clear. I mean, in the end, it seems to me that no matter what the media is, the medium is, there is no substitute for intelligence, an informed opinion, and talent. There's no substitute for those things.
Well, if you get a bad reputation, you're not going to get the talent. Talent's going to go where it has a chance to thrive and grow.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to get yourself into a tumultuous and cesspool where there's constant personal attacks. No one who has any self-respect is going to want to go into that medium. And unfortunately, that's been Pacifica. Personal attacks, ad hominem attacks, slander, libel.
Well, even constant. Physical problems. You know.
Yeah, you know. We won't mention the circumstances, but you were physically challenged. And it's unfortunate.
Hmm.
Is that not correct?
That's correct, but that was just the icing on top of the cake. It was the entire poisonous atmosphere of the place. I mean, you probably had the same experience I did. Is that I invited the people on the air who I thought were responsible for this kind of downtrend in this behavior, and I invited them to come on the air and talk to me on the air about a kind of a debate in the larger service of making the station a better place to be. They never showed up.
On Roy of Hollywood, KPFA in Berkeley, did a news feed, and it was carried on KPFK, where I was personally mentioned, and so I immediately called and asked for an opportunity to respond. They wouldn't give me a chance to respond, but they continued allowing people to attack, and I said, I'm not going to raise money for you all because I'm paying your salaries for you to be this unprofessional.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've engaged in censorship. Recently, KPFA, its program director and its management deemed that Bonnie Faulkner and I should not have an opportunity to discuss vaccines, safety, and efficacy of mandatory vaccines in California, which was a pressing issue at the time. And had we had that opportunity to present the scientific evidence of why mandatory vaccines were wrong and also show the money given to each one of the legislatures, including the sponsored legislation in California, who would receive money directly from the maker of the mandatory vaccines, and which might have swayed some of the people, saying, oh, you mean they're voting because they got this money, and then showing that it was in violation of their advocacy rules. If you get more than $250 from an individual, you're not allowed to advocate on that person's behalf because it's in conflict of interest. And these people got thousands of dollars each. And so I had all this information, plus the scientific records showing the lack of efficacy and safety in these mandatory vaccines, including Gardasil, and it was deemed that we could not go on the air. We were censored. Now imagine this, censored. It was so offensive to people. Well, I'm not even on the air on KPFA in Berkeley, that they actually came down and showed my movie on vaccines on the side building of KPFA with hundreds of people demonstrating outside wanting to hear a discussion, a debate. So I invited the program director to debate me, any doctor who is pro-vaccine to debate me, some of the other programs on Pacifica which are pro-vaccine to debate me, and they wouldn't do it. This is Pacifica, cowards to the end when it comes to coming forward and having an opportunity to face the person that you have attacked so they have a chance to respond.
BAI, back in the day, they used to have conservative broadcasters on.
That's correct.
You know.
You have good debates then. No. So this is the problem. This is part of the crisis. So I thank you very much, Mike Fader, for coming on and sharing your insights. 25 years as an assistant, also assistant program director, assistant station manager. You saw firsthand. Now, Mike went on from BAI to have a very popular show, listened all over the world on Sirius XFM, and now has one of the most popular programs every week on Progressive Radio Network. And so we thank you for these insights and giving us a
thanks
perspective.
Thanks for asking me to come on.
I'm Gary Knoll. This has been a continuation of our ongoing series on the crisis at Pacifica. Thank you for listening.